You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started today, I want to let you know about a free resource we're offering. It's an e-booklet called Pipeline: Succession at Every Level. Now, you may have already downloaded Developing Your Leadership Pipeline and walked through that with your staff team. If you have, awesome. This is your next step. Most of the time, when we think about succession, we think about replacing the person at the top. We need to think about, however, reproducing leaders at every level of your ministry. If you're ready to do that, then I would say go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there. Now, let's get on with the podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. My name is Daniel Im, and I'm here with Todd Atkins. And we are here with Jimmy Scroggins. Now, the really neat thing here before Todd introduced Jimmy is the fact that when I was pastoring in Canada, right, and we were doing an entire series on evangelism and on really equipping and helping our church understand how to do it well, I actually pulled up something called the Life Conversation Guide. And when I was in Canada, I was not part of a Southern Baptist church, and there's not really many Southern Baptist churches there, but I pulled
that
out.
Wait, you're not Southern Baptist?
Well, back, I am now. Back then I wasn't. But you know, I pulled this up and I was like, man, this is, because I grew up with CRU, like Campus Crusade and the four spiritual laws. And I looked through this Life Conversation and I was like, man, this is really good. And I looked it up a little more and I saw these videos of Jimmy teaching it and all. And this was like 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
And now we're doing a podcast with Jimmy Scroggins.
There you go. Well, you told me that I was supposed to introduce him. I think you just did a pretty good
job. Well, I didn't, not all the other stuff, but that
he
was kind of my
first. Spiritual laws. He's only got 3 circles. That's much easier than 4 spiritual laws. It's much easier to do.
Was that a goal of yours, Jimmy?
No doubt. We got to keep things simple. I couldn't handle the 4 laws. I can't handle all the steps to peace with God. We can't handle all these different, you know, complicated pictures like the bridge where you gotta, so we had to break it down.
Well, I do want you to tell a little bit about yourself, your suffering for Jesus in South Florida.
Everybody says that.
So you probably are suffering actually right now when we're recording this. It's first week of August. Yeah.
Well, South Florida is great. So I grew up in Florida, not down here. And, you know, what we call South Florida is 3 counties. It's Dade County, where Miami is. It's Broward County, where Fort Lauderdale is. And it's Palm Beach County, where West Palm Beach is. We're in Palm Beach County. And South Florida is like a different country. I mean, it's totally different from the rest of Florida. I grew up in the rest of Florida. And so when I got to come back down here to pastor in 2008, I felt like I was coming home.
Well, let me ask you a quick question. So about Florida, the craziest news stories.
Craziest. There's websites about crazy Florida news.
Why
Google it.
It's always
amazing.
Florida?
Because it's crazy people here, man. It's the craziest place you've ever been.
So is it that everything's bigger in Texas, but everything's crazier in Florida?
Yeah, no doubt. Crazier and hotter.
Well, those alligators.
Well, no. And you've got Micah Freezes from Florida, too.
Yeah.
Which is a force of its own.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we shipped him out, though.
That's good. It's too much crazy quotes. Yeah. Okay, tell us a little bit more about yourself personally and your church. But
yeah, sure. Well, as I said, I grew up in Florida. Ended up going to Southern Seminary. Lived in Louisville, Kentucky for 15 years. My wife and I, Kristen and I, met when we were in college, and she's a native Floridian as well. Yeah, we've been married for 23 years. We have 6 sons, 2 daughters. Our oldest is 21 years old. Youngest is 8. And been the pastor here at Family Church since 2008. When I came to Family Church in 2008, this was called the First Baptist Church of West Palm Beach. It's a downtown Southern Baptist church. It looks like a wedding cake on the inside. We're so traditional. We have a steeple. We have columns on the outside and the inside of the sanctuary. And that's just the kind of church that is a legacy church over 100 years old. Well, we eventually changed the name. So we changed the name to Family Church. We are a multicultural, multi-generational, multi-campus church with 8 campuses and we're launching three more between now and February. So in February, we'll open our 11th campus.
That's awesome, because I didn't realize, Jimmy, that you had eight kids. I just interviewed Dahati Lewis for the podcast, and he has seven.
And he's prolific.
And he actually, and if I'm not just saying this, but he said one of his things this next month is to evangelize every day. And as I asked him how, he was like, well, I bring up the life. I use the three circles every single day.
Wow. I didn't know that Dahati was using that. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. It's a good deal.
A very good deal. So, okay. So church is 100 years old, but it's not, you know, it's building on that legacy, specifically with church planting. And I do, I mean, most people that listen to this also know that New Churches is under Lifeway Leadership. And that Daniel and I do another podcast with the infamous Ed Stetzer that is all about church planting and multi-site specifically. But talk about the heart for that you guys have for church planting as well.
Well, the main reason we have a heart for that is we just think the name of the game for moving the needle on lostness in our community and really in our world is we've got to have more Christians having more gospel conversations. We've got to have more churches starting new gospel congregations. And so that's it. More conversations, more congregations that are centered on the gospel. And so in order to do that, if you come to a place like South Florida, there's 7 million people in South Florida. So if you hear somebody say there's 7 million people in Miami, they mean the Miami metropolitan statistical area, which is the three counties I mentioned a moment ago. And so that's where the 7 million people are. Almost all of these people are unchurched, far from God. I know you can talk to a church planter anywhere and they'll explain to you why their church is in the least church place in the whole world, even if they're in Nashville, Birmingham, or Greenville, South Carolina. And they're probably right, because you know what? We need more congregations. But Barna research said that West Palm Beach is the most never churched city in America. And so the most highest percentage of never churched people anywhere in America are right here. So we know we need more congregations. There's 52 English speaking Southern Baptist churches in Palm Beach County, where I live. There's 1.5 million people here. And most of those 52 churches are dead or dying. And we just need a whole lot more work. And so we decided we're going to try to move the needle. We're going to try to make a difference. We're trying to plant 100 churches in South Florida. We also know there are many other great churches and groups that are trying to plant churches down here as well. And we need all of them to succeed, because no one group, no one mission board, no one church can possibly reach 7 million people. If you want to reach the 7 million, let's say you want to change the percentage of lostness just 1%. Just 1%, you would have to make 70,000 new disciples. And so it's not about shuffling the deck. It's not about moving sheep from this church to that church. Okay. It's about how do we move the needle? 70,000 brand new disciples. That's a pretty big bite.
Love that. Love what you guys are doing.
Well, I want to get into our first question, and that is, who are you currently learning from?
Yeah, well, it's funny. We learn from a lot of people. One of the groups that's made a difference in our church is a group called I Am Second. They employ a method that probably many of your listeners are familiar with. They use a methodology called T4T, and it's a disciple-making evangelism strategy that employs some different tools, and these guys have really helped us. Now, we don't buy their whole deal, and we don't employ everything that they do, but they have taught us a lot, particularly in the area of calling people to rapid obedience, calling people to share the gospel quickly soon after they become believers, and calling every believer to be a missionary and an evangelist and a discipler. And so we've really learned some things from them, and they've helped us a whole lot.
I know you're a reader too, so give me a book or two that you read recently that you would pass on.
You know, it's interesting. Some of the books that I read may not mean a lot to your listeners, but the best book I read this summer was a book called The Fourth Star. And it's about four different Army generals and how they progressed through their Army careers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And these were the four most influential generals in the Iraq War. in the Gulf War, the second one. And so it was a fascinating read on leadership and on how people think about leadership and on how people take different strategies and approach problem solving with different approaches. And some of those approaches win and some of those approaches lose. And so at the conclusion of the book, they said, hey, these two generals, their approach was right. And these two generals, their approach was wrong. And I think there's just a lot that we can learn from leaders in a lot of different fields when it comes to attacking the problem of lostness in our communities and in our cities.
Good. What was the name of that book again?
It's called The Fourth Star.
All right. Good. We'll be sure to put a link to that in our show notes today. But let's get to our second question, Jimmy. What is the main point of emphasis for your leadership team right now?
Well, the main point of emphasis for us is we're a growing organization, so we have to change. And one of the things that happens when you're growing, you have to change the way that you lead. You have to change the structure of your meetings. You have to have different kinds of leaders doing different kinds of things. And so we need our team to be enthusiastically flexible as they approach different tasks that are assigned to them. And, you know, again, our number one thing on the front burner for us all the time is how do we reach every resident? You know, the Bible says in Acts chapter 19 that after Paul went to Asia, and we think there was maybe as many as 12 million people living in Asia at the time, the Bible says that every resident of Asia had heard the gospel. And so we have 7 million people in South Florida, and our goal is that every resident in South Florida would have multiple one-on-one opportunities to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ and respond. And so we're trying to train an army of disciples who are equipped and eager to change everyday conversations into gospel conversations. And that's the drum that we're beating. That's the play that we're running. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, what I love about your emphasis on adaptability, that flexibility, you know, on the one hand, it's like, hey, you know, what 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's like, hey, what's your 10-year plan? What's your strategic plan? And with the way that our world is just rapidly shifting, right? Adaptability is so important. There's this book, Stanley McChrystal, Team of Teams. He talks about why adaptability is so much more important than hierarchy. And it's neat to see the different stories that he uses there. But I love how you're living that out as a church.
Well, you know, a business term that's really kind of been hot the last 10 years or so is the term agility. And I think organizations that learn agility are going to be the most able to respond to a changing culture. And that's one of the things we're learning. You know, at our church, we've abandoned the regional megachurch concept. We're not trying to create a regional megachurch where we get more and more and more people to show up at one place. So we're actually planting smaller sites, as many as we can. We think that multi-site for us is a long-term method of church planting. And we are trying to create a network of neighborhood churches. We want every neighborhood to have a gospel church in it where people can be trained to have gospel conversations. So, you know, one of the ways that we're trying to be more agile is we want fewer buildings. We want smaller buildings. We want that for cost management as well as just for the agility that we want. We want to have the agility to respond to changes in the culture, because we don't even talk about 5 or 10 year plans here. We're talking about trajectories. So we say, hey, we want a 5-year trajectory, and we're going to try to kind of aim this direction with a future that we're aiming towards. But we don't really have a plan, because that's we just have to blow up our 5-year plans about every 6 months, it seems like.
That's good. Yeah, we recently had Mark Jobe from New Life Chicago on the podcast, and he's going to be speaking at our upcoming succession conference here in Nashville. And what was really cool, and this remind what you said really reminded me of what his plan is they have about 25 campuses. It's multi-site, but they're all pretty much their own church plants that are being resourced by them. But over the next 3 years, his plan is for all 25 of those locations to multiply to each plant, and to be able to get to that scale where it's like, yes, you know, we need to be planting churches that plant churches that then plant churches and continue on. We're going to see that rapid multiplication happening.
Well, we've learned so much from Mark Jobe and that church at New Life. In fact, they're the ones that I'm aware of nationally that are the closest to doing what we are doing. So they're a little bit further down the road than we are, but we do the same thing, live preaching at every campus, local leadership teams, and all of that. So we have a very similar kind of a strategy and philosophy, and we have a similar situation where we are having our campuses are starting to multiply as well, and that it's a lot of fun to talk about, but it is a lot to kind of it's a lot to manage, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, and one of the things that I think is often misunderstood when people think of the word succession, they're thinking about replacing, you know, a leader. They're thinking about replacing a leader at the top, when succession should really be all about being succeeded, being it's not about replacement. It's about And so when we talk about pipeline and people are saying, well, you guys are pipeline guys, why are you talking about succession? Well, we're talking about creating succession at every level, because you're only going to have you're only going to have a full pipeline when you've got people replacing other people. And it shouldn't be leadership placement. It should be leadership production. So I just wanted to kind of toss that caveat in. And that's really, you know, the philosophy and framework that we're about is all about scalability. And when people hear that, they think, oh, well, that's not biblical, or that's too much of a systems issue. So how would you answer that argument when people say, well, what you're doing when you're talking about scalability and you're bringing all these business terms in, how do you answer the naysayers when they bring that back to you and what you guys are doing?
In terms of talking, you mean in terms of speaking in business terms?
Yes.
I haven't really faced a whole lot of that. I mean, truthfully, people who like to critique terminology are usually doing that out of some kind of jealousy or some kind of desire to be a hindrance. I mean, these terms, there's no big deal about these terms. All truth is God's truth. If we discover great things about leadership, I mean, my gosh, who's the originator of scalability when it comes to church work? I'd say Jesus. And then Paul picked it up pretty well, you know. And I mean, how did he create a system where he's got Titus and Timothy in charge of appointing overseers in all of these cities and towns, because he doesn't have time to do it. So this is all about scalability from the get-go. I mean, when the Holy Spirit got this party started in Acts chapter 2 in the city of Jerusalem, it scaled up from 0 to 7,000 in about 2 weeks. And then it went on from there. You know, to me, we're just trying to recapture, and we're trying to continue what was started in the book of Acts. I mean, the thing of it is, we think we've got the same exact Holy Spirit that they did. It's not a different Holy Spirit. It's not a different gospel, and it's not a different plan, the church, to see the world evangelized. So to me, people who get caught up in critiquing, you know, what kind of terms you're using and so forth, I don't have a lot of patience for that.
I wouldn't think so.
I like that.
All right. So question three, what are two or three things, other than reading the Bible, what are two or three things that you absolutely must do daily to continue to be a good leader and continue to grow in leadership?
Well, you know, you guys have talked a lot about, and you write a lot about, what you do with pipelines, a lot about relationships. So I think you've got to create space in your life for the most important relationships. I try to make sure I'm doing that with my family, obviously starting with my wife and leading on to my children. And then I'm trying to create space every day to build relationships with our team. Whether that's in meetings or whether that's in personal time with them, having meals or just sitting down and talking or whatever. But I think building time for relationships is really crucial. And then I think especially for men, but probably for everybody, I think every man ought to do something physical every day. I'm not saying everybody has to be a CrossFitter, because I'm not. I'm just saying you ought to do something. Run a lap, do some push-ups. Do something, ride a bike, play golf, do something to get your body moving every day. I think that's really important. And I think that's important for longevity. I think it sets a good example. And I think it keeps your mind clear and helps you to grow.
Good deal. What do you do? What do you do?
Exercise-wise?
Exercise-wise.
What I try to do is several times a week, I usually work out in my garage. So I have weights in my garage. So sometimes I do body weight exercises, pull-ups or push-ups. Sometimes I lift weights. Sometimes I do videos like Insanity or T25, stuff like that. But I try to make sure I'm doing that four or five times a week. And look, I'm not like some Mr. Fitness. I'm not like in some kind of incredible shape, but I do try to work at it. And that's what I try to do.
Yeah. Now, Jimmy, you said you had 8 children. Can you tell us their ages and what leadership looks like in your home?
Did you ask me what their ages are?
Yeah. And
this is a pop quiz.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You don't know. So what I can say.
And their birthdays and their favorite color. Yeah,
okay.
But what does leadership look like in your home, Jimmy?
I can do all their birthdays. I can't do their years. I messed that up. All right. So my first 5 children were boys. My oldest is, so I've got him like 21. He's a junior at West Point in New York. I've got a 19-year-old who's starting college this fall at Palm Beach Atlantic University. I've got a junior in high school, a sophomore in high school, an 8th grader. I've got a 7th grader, a 5th grader, and a 3rd grader. So my first 5 are boys, next 2 are girls, and my youngest one's a boy. Leadership in my home, what does it look like? It looks like chaos. So I don't know. My wife is a great leader and she keeps us all organized. She's very stable, very steady, and she has a very quiet voice. And she is super, super nice and super likable. And I am kind of chaotic and emotional and driven and intense. And so we're like complete opposites in every way.
So Jimmy, I'm curious. So I have 3 kids, a 7, 6 and a 3-year-old. And I try to spend as much time as I can with them. But the area that I struggle with is finding independent time with each of them enough that I can really focus in and develop that with them. How do you do that? What do you think about that? Because, I mean, you got 8 kids.
Look, I'm for it. I mean, I think that sounds great. I don't know when that became like some axiom of parenting that every kid requires personal time with dad all the time. I mean, I just don't necessarily believe that. Like, why can't they all spend time with dad at once or in groups or whatever? And so, do I do that? Yeah, like this weekend, I'm taking my daughter to Pennsylvania, my oldest daughter, and we're going to hang out because it worked out. And I take my kids on trips and this and that. But honestly, I don't really prioritize that. I'm going to try to invest time in my children by being at their events and coaching their teams and having family devotions and having meals together. I'd say the number one thing that we do that I would encourage everybody to do it if they can is we do have a lot of meals together every week. And the way that we do that, because we have all these different ages and crazy schedules, is honestly we have dinner and we usually have dinner like really, really late almost every night. Okay. So it's not uncommon for us to have dinner at 9 o'clock at night after everybody gets home from football practice, but that's when we have it. So people have to get a snack, at 4:30 or whatever. And then we eat because we're going to sit down, we're going to talk, we're going to connect. And we've really focused on doing that 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
And even though we have 5 teenagers in the house, that's just the way that we do it.
Yeah.
And that's been a helpful thing for us.
Yeah. Jimmy, I love that because I eating together, I consider such an important discipline habit for a family to spend time together. And it's funny, a couple of weeks ago, we had Jim Shaddix on, and when his kids were at home, they would actually wake up early and do breakfast together because all the after school stuff. And it's really neat to hear that you're like, even though it's super late, eat a snack, eat this or what, but
I'm liking the super late.
Yeah.
That sounds way better.
It's more like European, right? More sophisticated.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. You're very cosmopolitan. That's the word that comes.
Yeah. Cosmopolitan. That's what I am.
Yes.
All right. So, this is going to be a fun one. What would you go back and tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead? So, 20-year-old Jimmy, what was he like? Yeah. What would you tell him?
Well, boy, does he have a lot to learn. I tell him, hey, I don't know how to break it to you, but you're going to go bald one day. So enjoy the hair. Start there. I would I'd say there's two things that I think this was true of me. I think it's true of a lot of young leaders. I think young leaders tend to undervalue institutions, and I think they tend to undervalue veteran leaders. I just think young leaders think institutions are kind of slow moving and boring and bureaucratic. And so we think we're going to bypass them with our energy and our ideas. And then I think we think the same almost of veteran leaders who maybe aren't on the same page with us and culturally or generationally. And I will say the older I get, the more I say, wow, I've been in some incredible positions to learn from incredible veteran leaders. And I've benefited over a lifetime so significantly from great institutions that were started before I was born. And I just think young leaders tend to undervalue that. And if I could go back, I'd say, hey, don't stop innovating and don't stop thinking new thoughts, but make sure you give proper value to opportunities to interact with great veteran leaders and great institutions.
Yeah, I appreciate how you distinguish those two out, the veteran leaders and the institutions, because sometimes it's like, oh, you think, oh, what can I learn from an institution? What can I? But I mean, there's so much wisdom that can be gleaned, right? Not just in the flash in the pan. And honestly, it's funny because sometimes we'll have groups and we'll have, I've young children, taught as young children as well, and we'll kind of pass on tips to one another, but it's kind of like the blind leading the blind, right? And yeah, it's so important that we're being discipled as well as discipling others in all areas.
No doubt. And those institutions too, institutions have staying power. That's why they're an institution. Institutions, they have strength. And even though, sometimes I like to use the analogy of a speedboat and an aircraft carrier. If you're in a speedboat, you're super agile and you're super fast, right? And you can turn quickly and you can get somewhere quickly if you're not trying to go too far. But an aircraft carrier can go much greater distances. And when you get there, the aircraft carrier brings a lot more firepower to the fight. And so sometimes there are things that only a speedboat can do. But I'm telling you, there's a lot to be said for being around an aircraft carrier if you're in a fight.
Honestly, I mean, that's why I ended up back. Well, not back, but that's why I ended up at Lifeway, simply because I was given an opportunity to come back and create a new area, leadership, and build it from the ground up. And recognizing as a kid, the institution that it was and has been for 130 years. I can look back now and say, hey, I'm the result of this place. I'm a result of the curriculum that was produced here and the way that it was produced to bring, about change in my life and through, good and godly people in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky. And then, sure, I was, I had a great church and we were doing great things. But for me, it was, wow, if I go here, I'm going to lose probably some of my flexibility and agility. But at the same time, I'm going to be a part of something much broader and I have a potential to do way more damage for the kingdom, from yep. that place. So when you were talking about that, I was thinking about the aircraft that are on an aircraft carrier. And so, yeah, I still want to fly jet, but I would much rather, I want to go where this aircraft carrier goes.
Yeah.
And be a part of what it does. So thank you for that analogy. That's a great one. I'm going to steal that as well as one or two other quips that you.
Now, to me, this is a bonus question, and I
all right bonus.
I have to ask this. Now, you just said what you said about institutions, right? Your church is how old?
Our church was established in 1901. Oh. That's when our church was planted. So I'm also serving at a church plant.
Yeah. Okay. So then in light of all that, the ministry that I lead is newchurches.com. It's part of Lifeway Leadership, part of this, but I focus a lot on church plants, multi-site churches. And there are a lot of people, especially young 20 something year olds that are like, hey, I want to plant a church. I want to plant a church. And what would you say to them, in light of what you just said about institutions and that you've revitalized this church. And there's, I mean, every day, 10,000 boomers reach the age of retirement.
Yep.
So what would you say to that and the fact that there's all these churches that need new pastors, yet there's a lot of church planting happening? Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I, first of all, I'm for all of it, right? So I'm for multi-site, I'm for autonomous church planting, I'm for revitalization, I'm for traditional churches, I'm for all of it, because we need everybody doing what God's put them here to do.
Yeah, and we fully.
But I do think, particularly in our urban areas, I think property and buildings are so expensive, and honestly, they're increasingly difficult to build because governments line up to make it hard for you to build things in urban areas. The bigger the city, particularly outside the Deep South, the more difficulty you're going to face developing church property. Well, in almost every city, we have a significant number of church buildings not being utilized to their capacity. And so to me, there's a lot of value, even though it's slower and a little bit more difficult and cumbersome, to insert yourself into an existing church and try to revitalize it. I tell you what, in our urban areas, we're having a real hard time. We can get these home groups started, and we can get little congregations started that can meet 100 at a time in some rented space. But we have a hard time moving these congregations forward simply because the places to meet are not there. So I think in urban areas, there's high value in thinking revitalization, because you can have access to buildings and property that you'll never be able to recreate that in any world, in any future that we can see on any kind of a scale. So I think there's a high value. If you want to plant in the suburbs, there's strip malls for days and schools, new school buildings and all that for days. But if you want to plant in a city, I think it's something that you really ought to look at.
Good deal.
I'm so glad.
Glad you asked that question.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, we've certainly appreciated our time with you. We know that you're coming out in a few weeks to film some content around the three circles to help people be able to share their faith more effectively, and so we'll put that in the show notes as well. So thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah. You bet. I'm grateful to be on, and I appreciate what you guys do so much.
Before you go, we want to remind you about the free e-booklet, Pipeline, Succession at Every Level. If you want to develop leaders at every level of your church, this booklet is for you. To download, go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there.